Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to episode 96 of Slam Fire Radio for March 6, 2015. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor the Frelate.
I'm another one of your hosts, Almost Welling.
And I'm another one of your hosts, Matthew McClatchy.
You really didn't think we were going to go that fast, did you?
I'm good, like, man. Okay, I got the time. We're good to go, man. Just roll.
Just hit it. Okay. So you guys are together.
We are.
You're in the same room.
Well, you're phrasing, yes, but we are in the same room. I'm over at Owens yeah. again. We're not together, but we are in each other's company.
You're in proximity to one another, but
there
not
you go. There
together.
You go. That's a good way of phrasing it as well.
You're still breathing his breath.
Well, we're not that close. No, we're across the room from each other.
It's funny because today I went to your town, but you were in Owenstown.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was actually in Fredericton. That's lame. I'll have to cut that out. That was crap. But I was in Fredericton today and then ended up here at Owens. So Owen just wandered off. So I'm going to continue to talk until he gets back here and puts his headset back on so he can start with what he did with guns. And Owen, well, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks. Glad to be back.
I'm glad we can do this on the fly.
Owen, you were about to regale us with tales of 308 loading. And
yes.
Chinese air or M14 goodness.
So I went to the range this week. I don't remember what day it was, but I went to the range and I shot the M305 for groups because I had done up some factory loads. Yeah. I did up some hand loads, random.
Were those the pictures that you posted yesterday or
yes,
today?
Yes. And I posted a couple pictures on the Facebook page.
Cool. So listeners can check that out.
Yeah. In preparation. And this was just a load that I did because Random New Brunswick Dave told me to do it. And he used it for his 308, which is a bolt gun. It's a totally different gun. There's probably nothing the same about it. But
it sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. But he said, try this. So I said, okay.
Yeah. I think he gave you some 168 grains.
He did, but I didn't use his projectiles yet.
Right. And I told you, okay, when those 168 grains don't work for you, I want them for my bolt gun.
You can come dig them out of the berm. I don't know. Everything I've heard says that this gun likes 168s.
Oh, no. See, I always heard it was 150, but so how did it do?
Well, I've heard that as well. I don't know. I haven't shot any 168s, but I shot 150 grain. Okay. Hornady 150 grain interbond, I think they're called, projectiles.
They got an interlock. I know that.
Maybe it's interlock then. I forget what it was called. Anyway, I think they're decent, more of a, like a hunting round. 42.2 grains of 30-31. And I got a decent group, a couple inches.
They do both, actually. Owen, I just looked it up. Interbond and interlock.
I think this is interbond that I got. Anyway, so I got a couple inch group out of that. I shot out, a couple different targets of that, but that was my best one.
What distance?
100.
Cool.
And which everyone told me about this gun, or I say everyone told me, everything I read on the internet, people said, if you can get an inch and a half or 2 inches out of this gun, you've got a good one. And that's what you'll get is, 1.5 MOA. That's about what you can expect. And then I turned around with the Winchester PowerPoint factory grain, 150 grain, and shot a one inch group with it.
Yeah, that was very early on. That was like one of the first times you had it out.
No, that was this last time. So that was in the same session as I shot a bunch of that, but that was my best one out of those. So anyway, that it really likes that ammo. So that's leaning me more and more towards a 150 grain projectile. That's for sure.
That's the stuff you were saying last week. So that's not overly expensive as well, right?
Oh, it's really cheap. Yeah,
I love it when you can find. Yeah, I love it when you can find cheap ammo that your gun likes.
I'm pretty happy with one MOA out of a semi.
Oh yeah, and why wouldn't you be? Jeez.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, I did that, and then I did, tying in with that, I did a bunch of brass prep tonight to get, and got a few more loads. I'm going to take that interesting story at 42.2 grains of 3031 was popping primers in my brass and in a couple pieces of brass.
So that's not even the max load yet for that.
43 something is the max load.
So you're a grain under and it's popping primers. Now, we were talking about this before the show. You were thinking maybe the cases might have something to do with that because they're federal cases, and some people say the federal cases have a generous primer pocket, if you will. It's a little bit bigger than normal.
Yep. And then it's a semi, so it's not like a bolt gun where the bolt is, you know, holding everything together during the entire process of the bullet firing.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Semi, it's pulling off a split second after, but I don't know.
Yeah, there may be some residual pressure in the barrel there, and that might be popping those primers out. Yeah. Interesting.
The only reason I noticed it, it's kind of a funny story, and these are kind of like one of these once in a million things that happen. The only reason I noticed it is because I fired, and then the next round didn't feed all the way into the chamber. It kind of got stuck halfway in. I was like, that's weird. So I kind of pulled it back and let the bolt drop again, and it didn't do anything. So I locked the bolt back, took the magazine out, and then had to use my knife to like kind of pry it back out. I was like, huh, that's weird. That must be something wrong with that casing or something. So I set it aside, put the magazine back in, dropped the bolt again. Next round wouldn't go in. It's like, what is going on? So I again take the magazine out, pry the casing out. This time the neck, like the rim of the neck of the casing where the bullet goes in, was actually ripple, like where it hit, looked like it hit something and
peeled back. So there was definitely something in there.
Yeah. So I get my flashlight and I kind of try to peer down into the chamber, and there was a primer sitting in the chamber.
So when it popped out and the case flipped around to eject, it must have had just enough centrifugal force to throw that primer right down, right down your chamber. Yeah. What are the odds? Well, 50-50, I guess, right? Either it'll go in there or it won't.
Owen, were these reloads?
Yes.
Maybe somebody got a little aggressive with cleaning out the primer pocket. Yeah, let's open that. I still see something in there. Let's scrape that right out.
I'm not Trevor. No,
I've never had this happen.
I did notice that some of them went in a little bit easy when I was putting the primers in. So I did read on the internet that the federal cases are a little bit generous on the primer pockets. So I'm guessing that may have been it. I don't know. I'm going to use mostly Winchester, you know, I'm not going to load over that load anyway at this point. The ones I did tonight, I dropped down to like the minimum load, and then I'm starting to work up by half a grain or whatever just to try out some other ones. Because it was flattening other primers and things like that. So
yeah,
it definitely, there's no space in the casing. I mean, it's filling the casing up to the bottom of the projectile. So yeah.
Which powder?
3031. So I did that. So anyway, I did a bunch more tonight. I got resized another probably 75 cases, and mostly got them length trimmed and stuff. And that is it, except I bought a goose call this week.
A goose call?
It's not really gun related, but...
Well, it's goose related. Yeah. And you shoot gooses with guns, so it's related.
They both start with G.
And they do both. Well, how does it sound?
Oh, you want me to?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'll try to do this cold. How's that?
Well, if I was a goose, I would be all over you.
I'd be pooping on him.
I wonder how that's going to translate over into the recording. That'll be good.
Yeah, I was awesome. A little close to the mic. I should have put my mic up.
That's all right.
Didn't anyway. Deafen me or anything. I think it'll be fine. That's what levelator's for.
Yeah, of course.
Cool. So, anything else, Owen?
No, that's it.
McClatchy.
Yes, sir.
You've been busy.
I have been busy with you mostly because you came to visit me again. That's 2 weeks in a row. So what time are you going to be back this week? Oh, wait, you were there today and I wasn't.
Yeah, But then I got looking at whether or not I could make it back or not.
Yeah, it would be cool. But, well, yeah, it's been nice having you around. But anyway, we did go back to the range. We shot mostly.
You're worn out, you're welcome.
No, you. It'll be a while before you wear out your welcome in my place, friend.
You know what I used to say to some people? Come again, but don't come often.
Right. So I'll let you talk about the range trip when we were together, because I don't need to talk about that.
Yeah, you've got a lot.
I've got a lot.
You probably have a lot to concentrate on with that one particular thing.
Right. So Matt and Tony, his neighbor, did join us at the range too. And just a little aside, Matt was sighting in his new gun, which is a Kiapa Little Badger. That's that single shot 22 you fold in half. It's a neat little gun. We played with it a little bit. We put it on paper at 50 yards, and it was printing accurate enough for bunny catching anyway out in the woods. You know, it's something he can just fold in half and throw in his four-wheeler with him. So it's a neat little gun. I don't know if I'll get one, because I've got so many small little 22s that I can throw in my four-wheeler anyway, but it was kind of fun to play with. I have been shooting my Mark II with poor results, really. I was getting some, I don't know, 2.5-3 inch groups at 50 yards, which I believe is what you call a shotgun pattern. And I was getting pretty discouraged. I was getting ready to just kind of throw the gun into the woods and forget I had ever bought it. But Trevor suggested maybe I should try some CCI standard velocity. And
to the listeners, he was literally visibly shaken when we left the range the first time. Oh, you were ugly. You were ugly. It was right bubbling under the surface of your skin. I hadn't seen you that upset for a while. You were pissed, man.
I was expecting. Well, I don't think I was. Well, I was.
Hey, you looked very, very disappointed.
I was very disappointed. I was expecting way better results out of this. I had a Stevens 305 or 300, I think it was called. It was a little 13-inch trapper gun, and with bulk ammo, I was getting better results with open sights than I was getting with this thing scoped at 50 yards. So I was very disappointed, very discouraged. And anyway, we actually went to the range twice that day, and when we left, you had suggested shoot some CCI standard velocity through it if you have some. And I did. I had about 30 rounds of it left over from another box of ammo that I had had previous. And so I brought it back to the range with me that afternoon, and I put 4 shots into a 1/4 inch at 50 yards.
Not just that. I gotta add to the story, because he brings his Marlin back to the range just to prove to himself that he can still shoot. Because he's like, you were getting so frustrated with how poorly that the gun was performing. You were starting to ask yourself, is it me? Am I not shooting right? So when we go back to the range, Owen, he brings his Marlin with him, pops out a typical tight, 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 like a tiger Marlin group. He's like, all right, it's not me. I know I can still shoot. I'm going to relax now. And then went back to work on the Savage.
Yeah. So yeah, out of 5 shots, 4 of them went into a 1/4 inch. And then one of them did fly a little bit, and it opened the group up to a whopping 1/2 inch at 50 yards. So the gun can shoot. It's very particular on its ammo. Now, here's the problem. CCI standard velocity is about as common as hen's teeth around where I live. That nobody carries it. Nobody has any CCI anything except for CCI Blazer. So I wasn't sure if CCI Blazer was going to help at all. I mean, had from the same company. the bullets look the same a little bit. They're both lead projectiles as opposed to copper wash. But I did go back on Tuesday. I brought a bunch of CCI Blazer and Winchester Wildcat, Remington Subsonic, Remington Golden Bullets, and Remington Yellow Jackets, along with some CCI Stingers. That was all the brands that Edmundston has. I bought a box of everything. And the only ammo that even came close to any semblance of accuracy compared to that standard velocity was the CCI Blazer. The Yellow Jackets actually did really well for a hypervelocity ammo. The Stingers were all over the place. The Subsonic was even all over the place. I was expecting better results with that. The Wildcat was just, I mean, that was a wild card anyway. And it was, there was no accuracy there. But the CCI Blazer actually does pretty good. I'm getting about... If a typical group is about a 3/4 inch right now at 50 yards, and it seems to be shrinking as I continue to shoot the gun. So I've got high hopes that the CCI Blazer may be something that I'll be able to feed this thing with, you know, at least minute of squirrel head accuracy out to 50 yards, which is kind of what I really want it for anyway, is, you know, small game hunting and some bench shooting at the range just for fun, you know, picking off dandelion heads at 100 yards. So, other people have been saying that American Eagle actually works really well, and I actually went to Canadian Tire in Fredericton today and picked up a bunch of American Eagle and also some Cellier and Bellet Standard. And I had a look at this, and online a lot of guys were saying that this stuff was really good. The guy at the gun store said this stuff is really good. It looks like Ely ammo. I don't know if you guys have seen Ely ammo before, but it's got it looks like it has lathed rings around the top or the bottom of the projectile. It's like they put every round through a sizing die or something, because they're shiny and they're very uniform. It looks like amazing ammo. I mean, it looks like it. Who knows if it is or not, but it looks like it's really high quality. $5 a box. Cellier and Bellet Standard is what it's called. Okay. So,
I was just seeing if that was the stuff that I heard was in stock at the Calgary Shooting Center. It started with an F.
Oh, okay. So anyway, I bought a bunch of that as well, and I'll be out to the range again before next show for sure and try that stuff out to see how it does. Also, a huge shout out to Chris at Canadian Tire. I don't know if he'd heard the show before, but he had heard of the show before. We were just kind of talking in line because, of course, he did the walk up to the cash register with me with my ammo. And so we got to talking.
Probably Filthy. Filthy's in there all the time.
Maybe. But I asked him if he was on CGN. He says, no. I said, oh, do you listen to any podcasts? Oh, a couple. I said, have you heard of Slamfire Radio? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm one of the hosts. Oh, cool. And so we talked about some stuff. Anyway, he said, you know.
You gave him your signature.
Well, I did sign his face. I had to hold him down, but.
Don't move. Stop resisting me.
It's going to be messy if you don't stop squirming. Anyway.
Sir, I'm certified, sir. Fighting me.
He said if you mention my name, he'll give anybody a 25% discount at Canadian. I'm kidding. I told him I was going to say that, and he's like,
What if they go in and try and use the coupon code CHICKENHAMMER?
There it is. Yeah, it's CHICKENHAMMER. That's definitely it. So, I did go back to the range again on Wednesday, shot more CCI. I think I talked about that. Oh, and I did a 130-yard shot. Sub 2-inch 5-shot group. So if you go on
a twig.
At a twig. If you go on Facebook, there are pictures. I was getting bored shooting on paper, and so our berm is about 130 yards from the shooting position. And through the scope, I picked out a lone twig kind of sitting about halfway up the berm, and I thought, I wonder if I can hit that. And so I did, I think twice, with this CCI Blazer out of the Savage. So I've got a picture. It impressed me at that point. It was at that point that I had decided that, yes, I think I will keep this gun and not throw it into the woods. So I also shot some more footage for my Buckmark review, so that's coming along. I actually lost a bunch of footage. I don't know if I had accidentally pressed the button and then pressed it the wrong way to record, and so I have a bunch of footage that I didn't need recorded and a bunch of footage not recorded that I wanted to have recorded. So I'll be going back to kind of finish that off. It's doing all right, but it is definitely going to be up for sale. I like it, but it likes Winchester Dynapoints for its ammo. And the best it shoots so far is about a 1-inch group at 50 yards. These are 5-shot groups still. And, you know, a 1-inch group out of a semi-auto isn't bad. I would accept that no problem, except that my 7.95 usually shoots 3/4-inch groups at 50 yards. So I don't know why I would keep a $700 gun when my sub $200 gun will do better than it does. So.
Well, there are reasons. I mean, somebody's going to want it for its uniqueness. It's a very unique firearm, and it's gorgeous. I mean, the wood is gorgeous. I personally love the sights. You're not a big fan of the sights. I think it's great. But my issue with it is I'd be afraid to take it out of the house and ding it up.
That's the thing, too.
It'd just be a range gun, right?
It's very pretty. It's a really nice plinking gun is what it is. You know, you go in the backyard if you live in an area where you can just go in the backyard and shoot, and you put up, you know, one of those auto reset targets or a dueling tree or whatever, and you just have fun with your kids or your friends or whatever. It doesn't really seem like a duty gun in any sort of respect. You wouldn't hunt with it. You wouldn't, you know, it's not a self-defense gun. It's a plinker. It's a pretty, it's like a barbecue gun. It's something you get out when you have all the family over.
And here's the thing. It's a $700 rimfire. $700 rimfire. That just dawned on me. I didn't think that was possible.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's well built. It runs like a champ. I mean, the only issues I've had with it are duds. If the gun, you know, if the ammo doesn't work, that's the only time the gun has stopped working. It always shoots. And even when I have a dud, you just rack the slide, it comes flying out. The extractor is fantastic on it. There's nothing that gets jammed. What's that?
That could even be Matthew. I said that could even be that it's brand new and maybe just not completely broken in yet. Maybe because if you do get a bad round and you turn it and then it goes. Maybe
no, I turned them and none of them went.
Oh,
definite duds. Yeah. That's it. I mean, the gun just always, if the round is able to be fired, it goes off every time you pull the trigger. The trigger is fantastic on it. It's a beautiful trigger. I remember when I transitioned from that to my 795 to shoot a group with my 795 as comparison, I remember thinking, oh, I left the safety on. But no, I hadn't.
Owen, have you seen this thing in person yet?
No, I have not.
Yeah, I didn't bring it either. So yeah, I'll have to bring it next time I come. But it is a really nice rifle. I do like it. I mean, I don't need to sell it right away, so maybe I'll keep it and play with it in the summer with the nephews and stuff first. And, I mean, it is cool, but it really is surplus to my needs. I guess I'm allowed to have...
You're one of those people that doesn't keep extra stuff around, extra guns around. If you don't need it or use it, get rid of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's usually not long going. This would become what they call a safe queen for you, Matthew.
Definitely. And I don't have a safe, so there's a problem. So we'll see. I mean, I may keep it for a while, but I don't think it's going to last more than a year in my house. It's going to be up for sale eventually. So anybody looking for a Browning Buckmark carbine with a sporter barrel, let me know. I'll put your name on the list.
Yeah, because there is somebody, isn't there?
Somebody contacted me and said that he thought he might want it, but he had to decline for now. So we'll see. But I'm sure I won't have a problem selling it. It's just I got to finish playing with it first, I guess. But it's just surplus to my needs. But anyway, that's what I did. I'm sorry I went so long, but I did have a lot of fun this week. I mean, it was March break. I basically went to the range every day that I possibly could, and twice on some days. So I've had fun. I'm ready to go back to school, though, I think. Never thought I'd say that. Weird. All right, Trevor, it's your turn.
Okay, well, first thing I'd like to do is a, what do the media call it? A retraction?
I believe retraction, or correction.
Yeah. It's neither. It's a clarification.
What do the media call it? This, that? No, but it's not that, though. It's something else completely. Yeah.
I just like to use big words. So last week or the week before, I can't remember which, a gentleman by the name of Justin wrote in to ask us about how to get an Enfield mag pinned in the States before he imported it in Canada. And this is why reading a transcript in a court is so dangerous, because if you don't have the intonation of the person's voice when they're speaking, you can't detect sarcasm or pauses, right?
I get in trouble a lot because of writing stuff on the internet. I'm just saying.
Yeah, because you can't detect certain tones and whatnot. So anyway, if you go back and listen to the episode, it sounds like I'm saying that it's perfectly legal to take a magazine across the border in the trunk of a car. And that's not what I actually said. If you listen to it more carefully, it's when I say it's perfectly legal, I'm referring to the Enfield magazine being 10 rounds as being perfectly legal. But it's lumped in so closely to the fact that he's talking about his grandfather bringing it across the border in a trunk. The mag is perfectly legal. Taking across the border in a trunk, we never said do that. We encouraged him to buy the magazine in Canada. So for those of you that called me out on that, if it sounds like I'm saying it's perfectly legal to take a magazine across the Canadian-US border in the trunk of a car, that's not what I meant, I assure you. I was simply referring to the magazine itself being legal. So for the record,
I remember that conversation, and I wasn't confused, and I don't remember thinking that you were saying that it was okay to bring it across. But like you said, you know, you could confuse it that way. So
and a listener did bring it up, and if you listen to it, it does sound like I'm saying that. It's, you know, I'm saying.
But don't, Justin, just don't. Don't do it, man. Yeah. Now it's clear. Don't. Just buy it in Canada.
The magazine is legal, but don't try and take any gun parts across any border in any trunk. Do everything on the up and up with paperwork. And once again, kids, This is not legal advice. The show, Slamfire Radio, is for entertainment purposes only.
That is correct.
And full refunds are available. So, I just wanted to make that crystal clear. I was referring to the magazine, not the importation of mags in a trunk. Because I was at your place 2 weeks in a row, and it is March break, I kind of lost track of time. I'm pretty sure I haven't said this on our show yet because I went back and looked. Anyway, we had Jeff Reese on last week, right?
I thought you were waiting for us to answer. Sorry.
No, it's okay. When the show was done, Jeff and I continued to chat for a while on Skype. So I says to Jeff, I says, "You got any of the Model 29s in stock?" And he's like, "I think so." And now I'm soon to be the proud owner of a Model 29. So yay for me. I bought Dirty Harry's gun.
Well, that's cool. That's a neat gun. And what caliber?
The 44. Yeah, I'm gonna go through all that. The model 29 is the 44 Magnum. So there's the model 629 is the stainless steel. The model 29 is the blued gun. Now this is a gun that was made back in the 70s and 80s, and back then it was manufactured a little bit differently. The firing pin was on the hammer. The barrel was pinned. The cylinder was recessed for the bullets to fall in flush to the cylinder. What they've done at Smith & Wesson is they're reintroducing some of their older guns under a new line called Classics.
Kind of like what Dodge does with the Charger and the Magnum and the Dart.
Kind of the same idea, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So there's the Model 29 and a couple other ones, but I don't know what they are because they're not of any interest to me. But the Model 29 is something that I've always wanted since I got into shooting a couple of years ago. I mean, a big Dirty Harry fan, and Callahan is my IPSC alias. And so I wanted this gun for a while. In the movie Dirty Harry, the very first movie, there's four movies, in part one, in some of the scenes, he has a Model 29 with an 1/8 and 3/8 inch barrel. And then in other scenes, he has a Model 29 with a 6.5-inch barrel. In all the movies after that, he's running the 6.5-inch barrel. So that's the one I got. It's the one with the 6.5-inch barrel. I would never get a revolver with an 8 and 3/8-inch barrel.
Well, it's almost non-restricted at that length, isn't it?
Exactly. My Colt Python, as much as I love the fact that it was a Colt Python, that's ultimately one of the main reasons why I sold it. It had an 8-inch barrel. And, on the 357 with the frame size, it just really looked out of proportion. The 44, larger frame, the end frame, even with an 8-inch, even with the end frame, the 8-inch plus barrel still looks out of proportion. So, anyway, I'm really stoked about that. So, I'll have that by the time everything is all said and done. I'll probably have that here in a few weeks to a month. And then, yes, went back to Matthews. This time I brought my VZ-58 to get it out on the range, quote-unquote break in the barrel, sight in the optic, plink with it a little bit, test the magazines. It has I got the one that's in 223, and it comes with really cheap plastic 5-round, well, they're 30-pin-to-5, 30-pin-to-5 plastic magazines, and
those are the clear ones, right?
Yeah, they look like a water gun, kind of clear, cheap plastic.
Right.
Pez dispenser type quality. And I got this one in 223 so that I could get it with the Magwell adapter. Now, there's a new generation Magwell adapter on the market, and the one that I got is actually made by CSA. I think the earlier Magwell adapters were not made by CSSA. I think they were made by like a third-party company, and there was mixed reviews on their reliability and whether or not they fed. Well, I had one magazine we discovered had a bent feed lip on it, and that was the only mag that didn't run. One mag didn't drop, but it fed reliably, and the bolt locked open on empty mags. Right from the get-go, they tell you it doesn't work with polymer mags. Matthew and I took a close look at the way the Magwell is designed, and there seems to be an extra rib in the back of the Magwell adapter that kind of interferes with the spine of the mag, wasn't it, Matthew?
Yeah, yep.
So, for whatever reason, there's enough gap there to let a steel mag in, like a GI mag, but not a polymer mag. So, anyway, the 10-round LAR mags run, and steel GI mags run, and it functioned really well. There's a video, I think. I don't know if it's on our Facebook page. It's on my Facebook page anyway.
I think it's just on yours. I didn't see it on the Slamfire one.
Okay, maybe I'll get it posted over there along with the video of the SIG P320. I didn't bring a whole bunch of guns this time because I just wanted to concentrate on one. Last time it was like, oh, these are fun. Let's try them all. Yay. This time it was, all right, let's see what we can actually do with this thing. The groups were better than the first time, and the sights didn't appear to be off quite as much. And I think maybe that's because I wasn't going back and forth from one gun to the other. I could really get into this one gun and concentrate on it. Shot another really, really nice group. We got some video to kind of check the flipperosity and see how bad it was. It wasn't horrific, but it's still noticeable. I know the first couple of rounds, I thought, wow, did I load these hot or something? And then I went, no. this ammunition's loaded to a power factor of about 127, so they're certainly not overly hot. And then we got the shot timer out to see what my splits were like. And my splits were a little slower than they are with my 40 caliber STI standard gun, my IPSC pistol, but it's kind of to be expected too. I mean, I haven't exactly been shooting a lot. It's only the second time I shot since November, so I think with practice, I mean, my splits would be probably as quick with this as with anything else. So, and shot my 30-06. I got a new Vortex Viper scope that I put on that. The rifle came with a Weaver. Sighted it in with that during deer season, and then as soon as deer season was over, ripped it off and threw on a Viper, but hadn't sighted it in yet. So I just took some miscellaneous 30-06 just to get it on paper at 100. And then I'll go to get in the spring and kind of fine tune it and try some test loads. So at least now I know that the gun's going to hit what I'm aiming at 100. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's always nicer to have a rifle that you know is going to hit. I mean, it's nothing drives me more batty than knowing there's a gun in there with a scope on it that's just not lined in yet.
Oh, you didn't just say that. You're in Carlton County tonight.
When in Carlton County, do as Carlton Countyans do.
Not necessarily. It's after dark, and that means your cousins are.
No, I'm leaving. I'm leaving. I gotta go. Bye.
So
your band music.
Time to go. Got to go pretty much. And then I was on two different podcasts this week. Sunday, after I got back from Matthews, I was on New Shooter Canada to talk about installing lower parts kits into AR-15s. And then last night, I was the first ever guest on the Armed Couples podcast with Toby and Melissa. That was a lot of fun. I was there. You ready for this? Air quotes here. I was their handgun expert. Yeah.
It's not like you know nothing about handguns. You do know quite a bit about them.
I know that the whole pointy end there with the hole, that's the part that you point at the berm.
Well, that's a good thing to know. I've seen some people handle handguns before, and I'm not convinced that all of them knew that.
Keep your booger hook off the bang switch till your sights are on the bad guy.
Yeah.
So, no, it was a lot of fun. It was really fun to podcast with them. So that'll hopefully be out before the weekend's over. The New Shooter Canada episode's already out. So if you want to hear the monotonous details of putting a lower parts kit into a lower, go check that out. There's more to the episode than that. But anyway, that was the main topic. And then I got to play with a Garand. Luke Giroux, the same guy that got you – not Luke Giroux, Pierre-Luc Boudreau, the same guy that got you your scope rings last week.
Yep.
He came to Fredericton to check out the machine gun museum, and he saw that I was building a Garand, and he's like Milsurp fan, like I'm a Black Rifle fan, and he was just kind of like, no, it's not happening. There's no way you're going to get a Garand before I get a Garand. And so he put some money aside and was watching CGN closely, and he found a really nice specimen. So he brought that over couple of nights ago and got playing with that, and he taught me how to load it properly without ever having to worry about Garand thumb and how Garand thumb is caused. And yeah, you guys know what Garand thumb is?
I do. It's when the bolt closes on your thumb when you're trying to load it.
Yeah.
Apparently it's quite painful and breaky.
And crushy. Yeah. So he showed me a real simple way to load it, and basically load it like a man. Don't be afraid of it, and you're not gonna get it. It's when
there you go.
Yeah, if you don't work the action properly and don't lock it all the way back and get it caught on the follower, as soon as it comes off the follower, it'll bite you. But you've got to get it all the way back off of the follower. And then when you insert the clip, one swift fluid movement, push it down, pop your thumb out, and the bolt closes, and Bob's your uncle. You see some guys putting the clip in and then hitting the charging handle forward. It's not necessary. The way he showed me, it's pretty awesome.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, he was saying pretty much 60 or 70% of the guys loading Garands on YouTube, unfortunately, like even including Hickok, are doing it wrong. And he was watching old training videos that have become declassified, and that's where he got this little method. Yeah, it works great. So
good.
And finally, my SR9 is on the way, and it's been painful. Like my copy of the registration form came in, so I took a picture of it and I emailed it to the guy like 7 times, and he kept saying, "I'm not seeing it. I don't understand. Can you check an email? Because it's there." And just as I was about to throw him under the bus and say he was supposed to email me the tracking number, I literally just opened my email and he spelled my name. Yeah, he spelled my name like Tavor, but with an R, so that's fun.
Well, that's cool. I mean, that why not? Trevor.
Yeah.
How's it going, Trevor? Trevor for latte. That's your new name.
It's your tracking number. So my SR9 is on the way.
Cool.
And then hopefully in 2 weeks, I'll be telling you about my new Smith & Wesson Model 29. And then I'm done.
Right.
I don't have a problem.
Right. Yeah.
Stop whenever I want to.
And I know the first step is admitting the problem, not denying the problem.
I don't have a problem. I can stop whenever I want to.
There you go.
I just don't want to.
Yep. Nailed it.
All right. let's nail some upcoming events, shall we?
Sure.
The 5th annual charity shoot will take place on June 27th. All proceeds, proceeds.
I believe you nailed that. Proceeds.
All proceeds this year are going to go to the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation. The Tommy course is full, but in conjunction with the Tommy 4th, on the 4th of July, we will be having a IDPA-style match. So if you're interested in coming out to meet Tommy and take part in some IDPA-style shooting, that's on July 4th at the Red Squish Gun Club. No pre-registration or anything, no black badge or nothing required. Just go on out and have a good time. You're just going to need 9mm and up handgun and a holster. That covers a trigger guard, probably.
A couple of spare mags are probably need as well.
Yeah.
But, come on out and play. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I imagine 3 mags total is probably all you're going to need for that.
I think that's all you're allowed in IDPA.
I think so, yeah.
Because they carry one in the gun and two on their belt. So.
That's it, yeah. So, and then we've got SummerSlam, August 8th and 9th. 16 stages of IPSC Happy Time Goodness. The Nationals are... We're going to throw in a couple other IPSC things like the Nationals. We'll throw that in there. I think, actually, you know what we should do? And I'm not sure if I mentioned this to one or both of you. We should get Pat Harrison on from Action Shooting Radio to come on and talk about the Canadian Nationals.
Oh, that'd be cool.
The match director. Yeah, get some spoilers as to what to expect at the match, etc.
Sure.
But right around the corner is the NFA AGM. That is in Quebec City on the 23rd and 24th of May. So you might see us there. Hard to say these days. That's a transition, or a segue, as we say in the biz, into news. And I will give a quick NFA update. And it will be quick because essentially not a whole lot has happened. So bring you back to speed if you didn't hear last week's show. There's been some... disruption in the NFA. And what happened was President Sheldon Clare fired Executive Vice President Sean Bevins. Some of the board members, so the NFA has a board of directors made up of representatives from each province. And some of the board members accused Sheldon of violating the NFA's bylaws by firing Sean. They say that employees are hired and fired by the board of directors. And because he did not allow them to do it, they felt like he was violating the bylaws. As a result, they've tried to, on a couple of occasions, vote him out. There was actually a meeting that took place where they voted him out, and they put Claude Colgouin in as president. Submitted the meetings to the NFA, etc. That prompted Sheldon and the executive to get the... NFA's lawyer that's on a retainer to look at this, and he declared that the meeting was invalid. It wasn't supposed to have taken place. And it was his legal opinion that because the meeting shouldn't have taken place, that no one had been removed. When they had this meeting and tried to remove Sheldon, Sheldon claimed, we'll call him Mr. Clare. No, we won't call him Sheldon. He claimed that because they had this meeting kind of behind his back, that was what he considered unethical behavior. And he decided that he was going to remove two of the directors. So it really turned into, well, this is what the bylaws say. No, this is what they say. Back and forth. The lawyer gave his legal opinion that the meeting shouldn't happen. And so since it shouldn't happen, nobody was removing anybody, and they should remain with the status quo, and it should be business as usual. What it essentially boils down to, this is an opinion. This next part is an opinion. Sheldon Clare claims that he was the one who is the direct supervisor of the executive vice president, Sean Bevins. So because he was Sean's direct supervisor and Sean reported to him, he had the authority to fire Sean. The board disagrees with that. Now, whether Sheldon Clare is correct or not, I don't think is the issue. Because he took it upon himself to fire Sean, whether he was authorized to do so or not, it did in turn upset the board. And just because, and I'm speaking hypothetically here, just because he was able to fire Sean, maybe he shouldn't have. You know, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And this is an example of a case where he shouldn't have. If he had turned it over to the board, real good chance that the board would have decided, based on the evidence presented by Sheldon, that Sean would have been fired anyway. And then nobody would have anything to complain about. But because he did it himself, the board feels that he violated the bylaws. If he had let the board make the decision, no one would feel like the bylaws would, or no one would feel that the bylaws were violated, and we could all get on with our lives. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. So there was another meeting after the meeting where he wasn't there and they voted to remove him and they voted to put Claude Colguin as president. In that meeting, we don't know what happened yet. The minutes haven't been published yet, but the intention of the board was again to try and have a vote to have Sheldon removed as president. It doesn't look like that's happened because it appears to be business as usual at the NFA. But until the minutes of that meeting come out, we won't know exactly what took place. So that's what we're waiting on right now. Myself personally, as a coordinator for the province of New Brunswick, I've sent him a message on Facebook and asked that he step down because the members are asking that he step down. 100% of the members? No, but enough of the members have asked for him to step down over this that I decided that I work for the members, I don't work for him. So I've kind of thrown my support behind the members, and if they want him to go, then I want him to go. And I want him to go because I think that he demonstrated poor leadership ability in not taking it to the board. In trying to do this himself, he's upset the board and ultimately, I believe, caused all of this disruption. If he had gone to the board and let the board make a decision, whether he agreed with it or not, if he had let democracy play out, I don't think we would be where we are. So that's where we're at with the NFA. We still, you know, Slam Fire Radio still supports both the CSSA and the NFA. We're not going to hate on them for the sake of hating on them. We do not want to have their baby. And at this point, I don't think any of us feel that the answer is a third association. I think starting a third association is very unrealistic. The logistics.
Well, there are, I mean, and I think this is where the Owen and I start to chime in again and start maybe a little discussion on maybe a third, why would a third organization be bad, or what could the benefits be from it?
Right. Well, we talked, Sean Bevins and I had a conversation on the phone this morning for about an hour and a half, and we tossed this idea around. And if you look at the overhead costs of operating the NFA or the CSSA, all the logistics and setting up, the bank accounts, the office space, paying a secretary to answer the phone, email, servers, websites. You need to raise substantial capital in order to start this association. Then you need to do recruitment drives. Then you need to offer these people something. I mean, we have a hard enough time to get people to join what we have now. And the first question they always ask you is, what's in it for me? Why should I join? What am I getting?
Right.
Well, am I getting insurance? What else am I getting? Oh, yep. Wow, I'm getting a magazine. I can't read anyway. You know, like, it's so hard. It's so hard to get people to join the two that we already have. How do we sell a third one? $45. Oh, my God. That's a box of ammo. So,
And that is a good point. And the other things that we had brought up when we had discussed this earlier was the NFA already has inroads to Parliament and to contacts on you know, in the government. And so why would we want to start another organization where we would have to start from scratch whenever we already do have contacts?
Yeah, and you and I talked about that, and my opinion was it took a long while for the NFA to get on Parliament Hill. And if there's any bad blood that exists between previous NFA members or the president of the NFA and certain members of Parliament, a new association may not carry any of that baggage to the Hill.
And that would be a positive, yep.
Let's remember, the NFA was told you are not welcome at Stephen Blaney's announcement about Bill C-42.
Right.
You know, Tony was there and a couple of CSSA folks were there, and we had one NFA board member in the audience, but we did not have an official presence at that announcement like the CSSA did.
Right.
And that stems from bad blood from Parliament doesn't take kindly to the no compromise movement. That's not, you know, according to some people in Parliament, that's not very Canadian. Canadians
right.
compromise, Canadians give and take. And this strong, we will not bend, we will not give you another slice off the loaf of the bread, maybe part of why we were locked out of that
may have been it. But then for somebody who says, well, let's start a third organization so we don't have that, well, why don't we just join the CSSA then, because they already don't have that. So why do we need a third one again? Let's just pile support behind the CSSA if that's the organization that the government is going to recognize.
Yeah. Part of me would like to see a third one start, because I think that basically unless this rift gets settled quickly, the NFA is going to sink probably within a year.
And if that happens, then we have the CSSA and we just rally behind them and we put them where we need them to be and we continue with them. I just don't like splitting the ranks. You know what I mean? Like in the States, they have one big national gun organization, the National Rifle Association, the NRA. They do have multiple other organizations. They have some state level, some municipal level organizations and stuff. And those all do great things, but they have one. And the gun dudes like to call it him or them the gorilla in the room, you know.
It's the 800-pound gorilla.
It's the powerful one. It's the one that can get stuff done. It has inroads. So I think here in Canada we need to focus on having a very strong single organization would probably be best, but we do have two, and as long as we have two, I think we need to support them both.
I agree, and I just don't know that a third one is the answer right now, and with all the logistics involved in starting a third one, getting a lawyer on retainer, and anybody who knows anything about starting a not-for-profit knows that there's a tremendous amount of things that have to be put in place. You have to be official. You have to be an operation. You have to be fully operational and functioning and registered and everything before you stick your hand out and ask for membership dues.
Right.
Before you start asking people to sign up, everything's got to be in place. You can't start taking memberships and then make it up as you go. Nobody's going to join that Mickey Mouse circus. No way. I want to make sure that if I'm going to join you, you're professional.
It's legit right off.
Everything's buttoned up tight.
Yeah. So I don't want to discourage anybody from who's gung-ho and wants to start their own organization. We do have other gun organizations here in Canada. They're quite small, but we do have other ones here. And if somebody is gung-ho and wants to start something, I'm not going to tell you don't. I just don't want to see support be drained from this NFA and the CSSA because a new organization is there. So if you want to start another one and continue to support the NFA and CSSA, or even if you don't, just try not to draw, you know, members from it. Maybe if members want to join all three, that's great. But I just don't want to see the support wane for the organizations that we already have, because they are doing good things for us. Even if right now they're in a bit of turmoil, they're still on our side. They still want good things for Canadian gun owners.
Yeah, this is why I'm so torn, because even though the NFA is so dysfunctional right now, and I do not support the member, and as a paid member, I have the right to not support the president. I'm a paid member. I can give my opinion, and some people have been giving their opinion and withdrawing their support, or there's people coming up. So one guy is saying his membership is under review because of something he posted that was, you know, not in favor of the president on the NFA webpage.
But that shouldn't be allowed. As a paid member, you should have the right to have your opinion.
That's right. I don't have to support the president. I'm a paid member. That gives me the right to not support him.
That's right.
So I support the NFA and the overall goals and mission of the NFA, but right now I can't support the president because I feel that his unilateral decision has caused this nightmare. Whether he had the authority to do it or not, in using poor judgment in doing it, has resulted in this mess. That's my final word.
Interesting. So, all right. Well, that was a good update. Thanks for that. And I, you know, any listeners who have comments or questions or suggestions about this third organization or even how we can help the NFA and the CSSA in their current form, you know, send us an email. We love hearing from you.
Oh, here's one. Okay, I got one final funny thing. The day that this all blew up, somebody sent me a note from the CSSA and said, "I've got an application here. If you want it, we could always use good men like you."
That's funny.
That is funny. All right. Well, you want to get this next news item?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, please.
I would love to. Gun fired in McDonald's shooting was legal, lawyer says. Two men dead.
Oh, wait. Hold it. Yeah. Gun fired. Yeah. The gun. The way you read it, it made it sound like the firing of the gun was legal. The gun that was fired.
No, we fire weapons around here, but like we terminate them because their employment was poor. Is that what you? Yeah, sorry.
No.
I was just reading the words that were on the screen. I'll continue to read and maybe it'll make more sense. Two men dead, security guard hurt after significant physical altercation and multiple shots. The lawyer for a security guard involved in the fatal shooting of two men at an East End Toronto McDonald's early Saturday says the gun that was involved was lawfully possessed. Lawyer Craig Penny says his client was involved in an altercation at the restaurant and that he has since been released from hospital. Police said on Saturday that an armed security guard, who was apparently in the restaurant to buy food, discharged his weapon following a significant physical altercation with two men. Detective Sergeant Terry Brown says the altercation took place somewhere near the food counter, and there were between 15 and 20 customers and staff in the McDonald's when multiple shots were fired before 3 a.m. Police say two men, believed to be aged 25 and 40, were pronounced dead at the scene, while a security guard was taken to hospital for treatment of a hand injury. While police have not identified the two deceased, the younger victim has been identified by friends as Donnie O, because I can't pronounce his last name. Brown says, what's that?
We met.
We met? So you met Donnie?
No, I did not meet the deceased.
Right. The last name is Wimette, is how Trevor's pronouncing it, so I'm going to roll with it. Brown says the guard, who was employed nearby, is cooperating with investigators. Penny says his client is grateful to be recovering from his injuries, is appreciative of the way in which the police are dealing with the matter, and is thankful to his company for supporting him. We confirm that the firearm involved was legal and that it was lawfully possessed, Penny said Sunday in an email. McDonald's released a statement on Sunday saying the company was saddened by events that unfolded. This was an isolated event that is currently being investigated by the police, and we are cooperating with them, the company said. The restaurant where the shooting occurred was open for business on Sunday. So it's interesting to see that somebody used their firearm for self-defense in a situation where he wasn't necessarily being employed at the time. This is a security guard.
This is my concern.
Right. But that being said, he was allowed to be where he was, and he was allowed to have the gun. And so why would he not be allowed to use it?
They're going to argue against that. They're going to say that you're employed as an armed security guard there, and when you're not there, you shouldn't be wearing your gun. When you're done working there, you don't get to carry the gun between home and there. You get to put the gun on there, work there with the gun. But when you leave there, you secure the gun and you transport it in accordance with the law. Leaving there and wearing his gun was like assuming he had an ATC.
Well, you're assuming that he was on his way home or on his way to work.
He wasn't at work. He was at McDonald's eating.
But we
I'm
could
being
possibly.
Here.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. And I'm going to be the double devil's advocate and suggest perhaps he was just on his break. And on break, I don't believe they. I mean,
he's still employed.
He's still employed. Working. He's still yeah.
Right, but he's not on the job. I'm the CFO in this case, and I'm going after him. And my argument is going to be, you weren't at your place of employment. You had no business to have the gun in your hip, so the shoot is not clean. That's what they're going to do to this guy.
This is unterrible. You're right.
I'm glad he had the gun. Obviously, he needed it. These guys were out to harm him. He was injured. He was hospitalized. Don't get me wrong, people. Don't flame me. I'm glad he had the gun because he used it to protect himself, and it's probably a clean shoot anywhere else in the world except Ontario. But because he was not where he was employed with the gun on, they're probably going to go after him for that. They're going to say, you had no business having the gun on in McDonald's. You don't work at McDonald's. You're not paid to carry the gun in McDonald's. You're paid to carry the gun over there where you work.
So answer me this, Trevor. You're a armored car driver, and you've got to go get something to eat. And so you stop at the Pizza Hut or the McDonald's or wherever. What are you going to do? Are you going to leave your gun in the car because you're scared to carry it into McDonald's? No, you're going to walk, carry it into McDonald's. You are working. Just because you're in a different place on your break doesn't mean you're not working. You're still working. Your employee by law pays for certain number of breaks through the day. Okay. They have to pay for lunch. They have to pay for, I don't know what this company in particular, but I know a lot of companies, it's two 15-minute breaks.
That's very different. It's very different because as an armored car employee, I'm paid to be mobile, and I've got to be with that truck, and I'm paid to carry the gun on my person as part of that job. I'm mobile. I move around. That's a different scenario. This dude is paid to carry the gun on that location.
But it doesn't say –
constantly moving.
It says that he's an armed security guard. That could certainly fall under somebody who is
nearby.
Who worked nearby. Right. Okay. So maybe, right. So yeah, who knows? I mean, maybe he was an armored car driver, but I think maybe they would have said that. So just an armed
security. I hope he was.
Yeah.
I hope he was. Look, guys, I'm just being.
No, absolutely.
That's what they're going to argue. They're going to say that he shouldn't have had the gun on him.
So far, though, it looks like, the lawyer is saying
lawyer's saying the gun was legal.
Right.
The lawyer's not saying he had the right to carry it.
That's right. I don't see anywhere here where the police have charged him with anything yet. So it'll be interesting to carry on with this story. Maybe next week there'll be an update and we'll see if he gets charged with it.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice.
The cops seem like they were being responsible, but as we know, a lot of times it's not up to the cops, right?
Yeah.
I hope that they don't do that on him, but thankfully he had it.
Yeah, absolutely, and he's not hurt, and the bad guys are no longer costing us money.
Well, and it is interesting to note that the reason that security guards carry a firearm, whether they're for armored car or whatever, is defense of person. So this was used in defense of person. It was obviously a serious, serious.
They don't carry it for defense of person. They carry it.
They don't carry it to protect the money in the car.
They carry it to protect themselves in case somebody wants to kill them for the money.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't shoot somebody trying to steal the money. They shoot somebody trying to hurt them.
And good shooting. I mean, by the looks of it.
Apparently, got them both. But
yeah.
So hopefully now let's flip it around. What do you suppose the chances are that this could then be used as, hey, look, see what happens with a good guy?
Precedent.
Yeah.
You know, this could very well be a precedent. This man could be on the other end. Maybe it's him going to the morgue, but he was able to defend himself because he just happened to have the right tool for the job.
That's right. Yeah. And he wasn't any superhuman police officer. He was just a regular old armored, or a regular old security guard. Anybody can get that job. You know, it's kind of demonstrating that just as he's just a civilian with a job that happens to carry a gun, and he was able to use it successfully. You know, this could help us, kind of demonstrate that, carrying concealed for civilians is a great way to protect this society.
And clearly, the neighborhood that he's in, they license the security guards to carry guns for a reason.
Yes.
This is turning out to be quite a common thing. I never thought in 1,000 years in Canada we would hear of a jewelry store guard carrying a gun, but
here we are.
That was in the news a couple of weeks back.
Yep.
So, we done with this one?
I think so.
Owen, you want to grab the detecting the details?
Oh, are we doing that one? Okay.
Are we doing that one, Matthew? Or Matthew, do you want it? Can you put it in?
No, it's okay. Owen can read it.
All right. You did that just because I criticized it earlier. All right. Train robberies are a staple of Western movies and television shows. But at one time in the Wild West, I hate even saying that, they were a novelty. After all, someone had to be the first person crazy enough to try to bring hundreds of tons of steam-powered iron to a screeching halt in order to hold up the crew and passengers. And someone had to be the first to investigate those robberies. That's where Alan Pinkerton and his famed detective agency came in. The Pinkertons, a new hour-long family-friendly drama about the agency's early days, take viewers back to that lawless time with a fictionalized look at the lives of William Pinkerton, son of founder Alan, and Kate Warren, thought to be America's first female detective. Co-producers and writers Adam Moore and Kevin Abrams aim to make the show historically accurate, and that includes the guns. Dave Brown is the advisor who makes sure that the guns used are era appropriate and depicted accurately. Jacob Blair, who plays William, found that out after working on his gunplay skills. I was excited to have some gunplay and ride horses and all that fun stuff, so I worked on my gun spinning skills, Blair said. Don't let CGN hear this. The second I got a set, I
talked... Matthew wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I learned my lesson. Carry on.
The second I got on set, I talked to Dave Brown about it. They were still using the old percussion cap and ball revolvers, so if you started gun spinning, all that stuff would go flying out of the gun and it would be pointless. Instead, he says, Brown advised him to work on his quick draw. He and Martha McIsaac, who plays Kate, both say they want to do a scene in which the two characters spend the entire time going through the laborious process of loading their black powder guns while talking. Brown keeps the firefights honest, too. The idea of gunfighters hitting each other from 20 or 30 yards apart graciously exaggerates the accuracy of the period's weapons, he says. The reality is these guns had very rudimentary sights. A typical fight would be from 5 or 6 feet away, and even then they rarely hit. They fired from one hand and fired from the hip.
So that's not entirely historically accurate, that last paragraph there.
Two, I think. Now, I'm no expert in black powder and, you know, percussion.
Right.
Cap and ball guns.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, if you are going to carry that around in a holster and the stuff's not going to fall out of it while you're riding a horse, spinning it around is not going to make the stuff fly out of it.
But it's not going to help it stay where it belongs either. And I do like, I don't care what his excuse is, I do like that he's not letting them spin their guns on their fingers, because that's I like that he's not, you know, they're not 100% right here. And I'll give you that. But I do like that they are trying to get away from the myth that the gun is this all-powerful, laser-accurate device that can be fired one-handed from the hip and take down a guy on a horse galloping away at 100 yards. All right? I've seen John Wayne do that, and I'm sorry, that's not real. So even if they don't get this 100% real, the fact that they're striving to be a bit more real with it, I appreciate that, and I'm going to try to check out this show just to see how well they do. And I love that idea of them having an entire conversation loading their gun, because you don't see that in TV either. How to load, you know, they just pull their gun out, and it, you know, their six shots revolver fires 18 times before you see them, you know, grab another gun. So I like that part of it.
Yep, and they are right in that the typical fight would have been, you know, very close distances, 5, 6, 10, 20 feet away. I guess my big beef with this is that firearms were definitely accurate enough to hit 20 or 30 yards.
Sure.
You know, even pistols at the time were plenty accurate to be able to.
Yeah, but not from the hip one-handed.
Generally not. Not your average guy. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure there was some people that could do that.
There might have been, yeah. You get a lot of practice involved there, but yeah. No,
I mean it was called point shooting, and it was done a lot even up into the 1900s. People point shot.
Yeah.
And if you look at the 20s and 30s and even 40s.
Yeah, a lot of times the sights were on there just as a decoration as opposed to...
Yeah, those old snub-nosed revolvers detectives carried. That was how they were taught to shoot was...
Point and click. Yep. Very good.
Yeah, I had to criticize that, sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah,
because I'm a history guy.
It needed to be criticized. I tell you what we're not going to do, though. We're not going to have a cowboy action episode. Let's get that clear right
this
now.
This is getting close to that. So
So, all right, let's move on. Our main topic this week is an email that goes back a couple of weeks, and I got the email here, and we'll read it again, and then... We'll, as a way to remind the listeners, and we'll discuss, kind of beat it around a little bit. I hope you've all taken time to, and by all, I mean you two, I hope you've taken time to reflect and think about this, because I know I have, but I still wasn't able to come up with something, so it should be interesting. This email came to us from Luc Godin, and he says, "Hey guys, been really enjoying the show. So, I'm an oil field worker in Alberta, and of course, with the price of oil dropping, I'm looking for another source of income. I'm considering using some of the funds I've put aside to purchase a 3D printer, a 3D CNC milling machine, or both, to make all manner of objects for resale. And by all manner of objects, of course, I mean gun parts and accessories. So what parts and accessories would you like to see more of, or what do you want made that just isn't available out there? What do you think there would be a high demand for? I might even be able to send a few items your way for quality control. Your input is much appreciated. Thanks. Okay, so what do we want to see that's not out there or something that's in high demand? So it could be something that's already out there, but is we can never seem to get our hands on because they're just not producing
22
enough.
Ammo.
There you can go. You make that? Thanks, Luke, for writing in.
Make 22 ammo. Lots of it. Send it my way. I'll help. Yeah, I don't know. I think some of the more easy projects he could begin with are maybe muzzle accessories, maybe flash hiders, brakes, things like that, things that screw onto the end of an AR-15 or similar threaded barrel, just because there are so many of them out there, and people like changing things out on the end of their gun. I mean, it's easy to do. Anybody can do it. So,
it's one of those things that people will add to their gun just because it looks cool.
If you could make something very specific for me, I would like a linear muzzle brake that has the outer diameter of 0.8 inches. That's what I would like, because all the ones I can find are 0.92, and I want a 0.8 so it matches flush with my bull barrel on my Savage. So if you could make me that, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, if I had to list one thing, it would be kind of similar to that. It would be a linear muzzle brake that is affordable, because I can't find one. I mean, I wanted one for that little PDW, and I can't.
I found them in Canada available the last couple of weeks, 40-ish, 50-ish bucks.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. I haven't looked recently, but I looked for quite a while and couldn't find the ones I wanted out of stock.
Well, one of the first things that I would probably look at is the current shotgun market. It seems like shotgun accessories aren't terribly difficult to make, because if you look at a charging handle for a semi-automatic shotgun, it starts with a tube stock. And it's just machined down to fit into the bolt. That's pretty easy.
That's true. Yeah. No, charging handles for all manner of guns could be made by you. That's a great
sling
idea.
Plates. Sling plates for both shotguns and ARs are pretty easy to do. Magazine tube extensions. It seems like with the popularity of three gun growing, they are difficult to get. I know. Last week I talked about my 870 having a Nordic tube on there, but it's not a Nordic tube. It's actually an S&J hardware tube. I like magazine extensions for shotguns with an end cap that screws off. So when it comes time to removing the spring and the follower, you don't have to remove the entire tube off of the original tube that's part of the gun, but just the cap. And I find that easier, especially when replacing the follower and the spring. So magazine extension tubes with a cap that comes off. Now, the Nordics do that. The S&J hardware ones don't. So you can make all manner of plus one, plus two. And they're not out there for every platform. For example, I've not seen very many options for the Winchester shotguns like the Defender series. So maybe find out parts availability for some of the popular shotguns that they're popular shotguns, but there's not a lot of aftermarket support for them. Maybe that's the market you want to try and nail down. I mean, don't think you're going to start making 870 accessories and get rich overnight, because there's 100 companies making 870 accessories, right?
Yeah.
And so I think shotgun parts are pretty easy to make. They don't have to be uber precise. You're not talking like, F-class parts or something, right?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point, because shotguns are so, their tolerances are so loose in them anyway, because it's a shotgun. I mean, there's no precision to be had with a shotgun to begin with. So yeah, it's a great place to start.
I don't know about bipods. I don't know how much work is involved in making. Well, there are some bipods that, when talking about F-class, you guys have seen those big honking arch-type bipods that are not practical for anything other than bench rest shooting or F-class shooting or shooting prone.
Sure.
They have like a big, huge piece of one piece of machined steel and very little hardware. Not like the Harris bipods that are collapsible and telescoping and folding and
right.
Know,
those would be a bit more complicated to make.
Yeah. What else, guys?
I don't know. A lot of what people want is already out there, so it's hard to kind of come up with things that that we don't find. One of the things I used to look for, I haven't really been looking for it recently because I've since moved on, but peep sights for 22 rails. I mean, I could find peep rails. Sites like crazy off of... Oh, yeah, you could make rails, too. I could find peep sites like crazy for Weaver or Picatinny rails, but I couldn't find any that would fit on a 22 dovetail, like a regular tip-off rail. So, I mean, peep sites that would just kind of clamp onto there would be cool. But Trevor's got a good point, too. Rails themselves. Make rails. I mean, people always like rails, but make some 20 MOA rails. Those are the ones that have a bit of an incline built into them already, so people can make their scopes reach out even further. That would be something to think about.
Aluminum base pads for magazines. When I was running my Glock magazines, in the standard division, once you put a magwell on your gun, you couldn't get a regular factory, a regular Glock magazine with a regular factory base pad. You couldn't seat it into the gun because your hand would hit the magwell before the mag was seated. So you needed that extended base pad that made it easier to facilitate a clean mag change. And allowed you to seat the mag before bottoming out on the mag on the mag well. Now the thing about these aluminum base pads is they were coming out of the U.S., so you were paying duty, you were paying silly shipping, and you were paying exchange. And one base pad was costing you upwards of $25 sometimes. So aluminum base pads, or even brass. I've seen brass base pads. And guys who they like adding that weight. Yeah, they like adding the weight to the mag so that when they hit the mag release, they know that that mag's going to drop free, especially in the Glock where it's plastic on plastic. A little extra weight there, you know. Mag wells, right? If you can get into a CNC machine, a milling machine, you could make all manner of aluminum or, I don't know, I'm not sure how CNC machine machines work, but I imagine you could mill steel parts as well as aluminum. But materials for base for magwells, I've seen aluminum, steel, and solid brass. And Owen's right, cha-ching, like $130 for a brass, solid brass magwell for my Glock. All of these parts are really popular and easy to get in the States, but we don't have anybody producing aftermarket accessories for IPSC guns in Canada.
Yeah, and look at other sports too. I'm not just IPSC. Look at I know it's not our biggest topic here, but cowboy action shooting. Just look, find somebody who's involved in that sport and see what are guys looking for. What can't they get? What are things that they're trying to get out of the States that they can't get up here in Canada? Those are the types of things I think you should be focusing on, because if you can produce something in Canada, people don't have to worry about the cross border and the duty and the taxes and all that other stuff. They can just buy it straight in Canada, and it's that much easier for them.
As far, yeah, anything I see more, you know, the tactical side of things, like when you talk about products that are in demand, well, there's a high demand for a lot of the tactical stuff, a lot of the rails, a lot of the mag tube extensions. There's a demand for that, but it's all made stateside. So if you start making all those products here in-house, so to speak, in Canada, then if the quality is Canadians are just the worst kind of consumers. I mean, you look at the hate on CGN every time there's a little snag with a product. Oh my God, burn the factory to the ground. They grab their pitchforks and their stakes and their torches and they just want to, holy, Canadians are vicious. So if you're going to sell something and it's going to be Canadian made, it's got to be good.
Right.
Yeah. You look at some of the manufacturers that are getting tore apart on a daily basis on CGN, you'll know it's a hostile environment to try and do gun sales in this market. Cheap, bitter people. So we'll be happy to help you with your T&E.
Absolutely. Get started on that 0.8 linear muzzle brake there for me, would you?
Yep. And even sights. Yeah. You know, Dawson Precision sights. They're not magic. You know, they're a piece of machined aluminum with a hole drilled in it for a piece of fiber optic.
There you go. You can do it. Let us know what you come up with.
Yeah, reverse engineer that stuff.
Yeah.
So basically we're saying copy what's out there and make it in Canada. I think that was our advice ultimately.
That's basically it, yeah. That's good advice though, really.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah. If you want to get creative, come up with something new, sure. But anyway. What do you think? Anything else for that, guys?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Owen.
Yeah.
How's about we have a little segment we like to call Warriors Ethos Project, and you regale us with tales of storing water or purifying water.
Sure.
Here's my thing. We're, you know, we got a little food storage happening here in the for latte household finally. And once I got my food levels kind of I mean, they're pathetic by most people's standards, but they're, you know, it's always going in the right direction. It's better than when I had.
Yeah, I was going to say they're probably actually better than most people's.
And they're certainly standards. Better than when I had none, right?
Yes.
So now, every other trip, I alternate. Instead of adding food to the stores, I'm grabbing a 4 or 6 liter jug of water. I love the jugs because they're rectangular, they're stackable, they're storable, and you got to look for them to find them in my basement because they're stored so well. Yep. I'm not trying to hide them. They just store really well. But what about if I just wanted to rinse out 2 liter pop bottles and take city tap water? Can I store that? Like, you know, if I don't want to buy water, what other options do I have and how long does it last and do I rotate it? And do I have to throw the store-bought water as often as tap water? What do I do?
I wouldn't worry if it's coming, you know, if you're buying like, I don't know even what that stuff is, but if you're buying it, it's all sealed in a bottle, like it's good. Don't even like, you wouldn't, it's not something you'd rotate.
Okay. So how long good? Like 5 years good? 25 years good?
It's ever. Ever. I mean, it's not going to maybe taste quite as fresh or, you know, any of that if you had to use it, but.
I remember you saying once that a lot of it had to depend on what was in it when it was bottled and whether or not the bottle was really actually clean.
Yep, exactly. And so if you're going to, you know, use your own bottles and clean them out and store water that way. Yeah, the chances they're not all sterilized at a factory, you know, so there's chances of them having something in it. But a cap full of bleach, not even a cap full, just a little few drops of bleach in it. Not going to kill you, but it'll kill everything in there.
That's actually what I do. Jewel and I buy big gallons of orange juice at a time. And when the jug is empty, I've got this jug and I was like, well, I could throw it out or I could rinse it out with really hot water, fill it with water, drop in a couple drops of bleach, throw it in the storage room. And now I've got lots of lots of water, and it's not going to go bad. And it's interesting because before I learned about putting the bit of bleach in it, I threw out a bunch because I checked them and mold was growing in them. And so you just, you know, I have since been putting bleach in and I've been checking them periodically, no mold at all. And you're right, it's not going to be the best tasting water because there's a bit of bleach in there, but it's not going to kill you. You can go online and
No, finish, and then I get a bleach comment.
Okay, I was just going to say the bleach, you can go online and you can find out the correct ratio, and that will keep you safe. It'll keep the water safe, and you know, it improves the lastability of the water. That's a word. I just made it up.
Yeah, it's like flipperosity, man. If you used it, it's a word. My understanding, Matthew and Owen jump in here, is that the bleach will do its job and then essentially disappear, evaporate. Woo, gone, right? Is that correct, Owen?
Okay. The bottle is sealed, so it's not going anywhere.
Okay, what if I cleaned the bottle with water and bleach and then dumped it out and left the cap off for 24 hours? It's disinfected, and now it's gone, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, if you're doing that, but you're also risking getting stuff into it. I wouldn't worry about it, honestly. A couple drops isn't, like, there's a lot more than that in your town water.
And you want to use bleach as opposed to some other chemical cleaner. Like, don't clean your water bottles with Lysol or something like that. The reason when I was keeping reptiles in a big way and I used to have to sanitize cages, we always did it with bleach because the bleach would dissolve and evaporate and go away and leave no chemical residue or traces or toxins behind that would then kill your animal.
Yep. What I do here for storage is I have we've got a pretty good source of pails, so I keep about 30 gallons. And I don't keep enough, but I keep about 30 gallons of water in pails, just water. No, I don't sanitize it. I don't do anything. And it's just for flushing toilets and washing, you know, things like that. And then I have several cases of bottled water that I keep for, you know, just for drinking water.
Right.
So, and we keep, and then basically any bottle, any, because we've, you know, had some power outages over the last year or so, and so any that we've used, we then clean really well, fill them up, and throw them in the freezer. And then you don't have to worry about them going bad there either, because it's frozen. Bacteria doesn't grow in the freezer.
Yep.
So that's kind of, and then it's nice in the summertime, you can pull them out, throw them in coolers, use them kind of as little ice packs, and you've got cold water. So you kind of have, you know, doing double duty there on some things.
Does the freezing of the water have any effect on the mineral content that is what causes the flavor change?
No, I don't think so. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I don't think so. other things with water, I mean, you can do it in big barrels if you want. You really got to look at your situation. I mean, I'm in a situation where I can get water if I need it without power, or, you know, like I have a well, so I can get water if I need it. It's not, I don't have to stockpile huge amounts of it. So that, you know, that makes a big difference.
That's certainly a huge advantage, yeah.
When it comes to filtering water, if you're saying, well, we do have a source of water, but it's just a spring that bubbles up in the backyard, or it's a stream or something like that, you want to make sure you have some way of not getting the beaver fever. And so you can get lots of little...
I had a beaver fever once, but yeah. It's really not an appropriate story for the show.
Different kind of... Yeah, okay. You can get little tiny, like small filters, like little hand, like camping filters that you just... Let's drop one end in the stream and pump it out into a bottle. I think First Needs makes them. I forget what mine is called. Might be a First Needs. I haven't used it in a while. And they have like charcoal filters in them, and they're pretty good. If you want to do volume, more volume, you need to look at like a larger, like a Berkey filter or something like that. And those are, they're a little higher end. They're all stainless steel, but they do a pretty amazing job from what I've heard. I would like to get one at some point. Just not really on the top of my priority list because we have good water here available to us. And they take, I mean, a lot, I even know people that use them in towns where there's fluoride in the water and it to remove the fluoride out of the water and things like that.
Yeah, they're supposed to stop doing that, eh? After 51 years, they're finally going to give up on that idea.
Yeah. Well, yeah. China said, gee, this stuff is dangerous. We don't want it in our water. We're going to ship it to the U.S., and the U.S. puts it in the water.
Brilliant, huh?
I know. So,
well, do you think if you have time, if you think of it, can you put some links to some of these filtration options on our Facebook page?
Yep. And like anything, I try to have three ways of doing stuff. So I have stored water. I have a way of filtering, you know, one way of filtering water. And then I also keep just the old-fashioned water purification tablets. I keep a little bit of a stockpile of them around. So, you know, that way if something happens to my filter and it goes down, I've got a backup, you know, for that. So,
excellent.
Yeah, I mean, water is one of those things you can't do without, and we could talk quite a bit on it, but get into a lot of detail, I suppose, in how to get water from a well or things like that, but those are the basics. It's good to keep some on hand because it is one of those things, and as a plumber, I know this, it's one of those things that when you get that phone call, it is panic. The world is ending. The zombies are coming to the person that doesn't have water. Like,
yeah.
It's amazing how panicked people get when they don't have something they take for granted. Very for granted. That turning on a tap, it will just come.
Yep. So. I mean, friends of ours, the line from the city into the house froze last week. And they have a newborn that's like, I don't know, less than 3 months old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't a happy time,
mm-hmm.
You know, and now that so the city had to go dig it up and figure it out and whatnot. First they called the plumber, and then the plumber realized, okay, well, it's a frozen line out there, and the city came and had to dig it up and whatnot. So now they were told, leave the tap in the house running.
Yep.
You know, and I used to do that in the old farmhouse that I lived in for a few years when I got to university. If I would go away for the weekend, I would leave something running because it was like a rock cellar and uninsulated pipes down there, and oh, man.
Yep.
They froze once and busted. What a nightmare. So I think what I'm going to do is I will continue to buy the store-bought water for consumption, mm-hmm. and continue to store for flushing of toilets and those sorts of mm-hmm. things in case the need arises.
Yep. And another thing to remember is in most people's houses, you have 40 gallons, usually 40 gallons of water already stockpiled in your hot water heater.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, yeah.
How is your hot water heater, Trev?
Really hot. Why?
Do you have one?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you went to instant. I thought you had a...
Oh, no. What we had was an oil furnace and an oil-burning hot water tank.
So I see. I thought you had... Okay, I understand now. I thought you had gotten rid of your hot water tank altogether and went to just the tankless system. All right, never mind. Oh, zing, yeah. Retracted.
Yeah, no, we went to one of the electric hot water tanks.
All right, cool. So yeah. Good, thanks Owen, that was good. I hope the listeners learned some stuff from that,
and if the listeners have any questions to add, you know, for this segment, it's been popular, we're getting feedback every week whenever we do one or whenever Owen does one. Yeah, so you know, throw some suggestions, because this was one that we just kind of went, Well, water's important, I guess. We could talk about that.
And I apologize to everyone for not having the Mylar food storage video done yet that I said I was going to do. So that is going to be coming. I had actually someone contact me personally and say, where is, what did you have? I want more detail. Yeah. I want to see this. So I'm going to try to get that up here in the next few days, hopefully.
And I'm always looking for bug-out bag suggestions because my bug-out bag is kind of stalled. It's got a gun in it and some fire.
That's basically all you need is the gun. You got the gun and you're good to go.
You use the gun, go take their stuff, and then the fire starting stuff to burn it down.
We're not wolves. Yeah, we're the opposite of wolves.
Pillage and burn. I think that was a Viking.
Pillage and burn.
For them.
Pillage and burn.
Pillage and burn. Yeah, work for them. Where are they now?
Then burn, not burn, then pillage.
Right, you got to get that right order. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way they do it in Newfoundland. All right, I'm going to grab this first email from Philp for obvious reasons, and then maybe McClatchy, you can get the next one from Grant.
Sure.
All right, so Jason Philp says, Canadian Immigration Handbook, page 51, shows a boy with the Daisy Red Rider and calls it a pellet gun for bird hunting. Is this acceptable?
Not in the slightest. Not at all.
Boys with pellet guns are not legal to hunt. What they're doing is torturing wild animals.
That's first of all, a Daisy Red Rider is not a pellet gun. It's a BB gun. And yeah, so that's the first mistake. And then Trevor nailed the rest of it.
Yeah, and you'll shoot your eye out.
Yeah, probably. Not even probably. I'm pretty sure you will, regardless.
It's in a movie.
That's the one. That's a great movie, by the way.
Canadian Immigration Handbook shows a child with a BB gun. I love it.
That is fantastic. I do like that part of it. Just don't use it for bird hunting. Get a shotgun.
Apparently, that was not written by the Liberals.
Apparently not.
All right, McClatchy, the next one, please.
From Grant. Dear Slamfire Radio, I discovered your show a few months back when I switched jobs and started having to make a 2-hour round-trip commute each day. Here in Northern Ontario, all I have for radio options is the CBC and a few French stations. Needless to say, I have been able to burn through all of your back episodes in no time and look forward to a new one every Friday. As restrictive as Canadian gun laws can be, count yourselves lucky to have local ranges and the opportunity to participate in events such as Multigun and IPSC. Up here, all we have is a 4-bay, 25-meter indoor range in the basement of our rotting gun club, and that is limited to handgun and .22 caliber. Your stories of the Restigouche Gun Club leave much to be desired. Your show has encouraged me to get my RPAL and to get out shooting even more than I have been in the past. All that said, keep up the great work, and please continue with Owen's prepper/homesteading section of the show. I know it's not always gun-related, but it's like slam-fire versions of Coach's Corner. Owen might not talk much or have much to say about what he did with guns that week, but when he does talk, he knows his stuff, and people are listening.
Oh, I'm going to start throwing in at Daniel. Now, you kids at home, when the zombies come,
put some foam in your knee pads.
I guess you got to watch hockey to get those jokes. Yeah,
all the other Canadians except Matthew will get that.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. He finishes off, I hope you guys are enjoying the maritime winter you are having. Nothing like snow days for government-sponsored reloading. Cheers from Grant from Capus Casing, Ontario.
You know, so thank you, Grant. If anybody needs a 7-second delay, it's me.
That's funny.
Actually, it's Toby.
Right. Definitely. All right. Yeah, well, thanks, Grant. We do appreciate that, and you know, I'm sorry that you only have a 25-meter indoor pistol bay to go shoot at, but think of all of the wild country you got up there in Northern Ontario. You can go anywhere you want and shoot, which I love that. That's what I like about living here in New Brunswick too. Lots of acreage to get out and do some shooting just for fun.
And since Grant is apparently, we encouraged him to get his RPAL. When he gets his first gun from the Calgary Shooting Center, because obviously he's not a communist, so he's going to do that. Send us an email, Grant. Let us know what you're pondering for your first restricted firearm. I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
So that I could tell you if it's anything but a Glock, you're wrong. No, just kidding. I wouldn't blame anybody right now for not buying a Glock. They went up again. Yeah, it's going to cost you $800 to get a Glock 17 these days in Canada.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. All right, Owen.
Oh, me? Oh, yeah, I'm next. Okay, this is from Chris. Hey, guys, thanks for putting on such an informative and comical show. I seriously laughed out loud at least 3 times a show. Well done. Matt, please share your rimfire wisdom, but step up from 22 and embrace the 17.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're cheap, but a 17 HMR isn't any more expensive than a 22. Ammo is a different story, I'll admit.
Yeah, a huge story.
There we go.
That's like, okay,
wait,
you can...
that story.
It'd be like if you can buy a Ferrari, but gas is now $100 a gallon. That's kind of the difference here.
Yeah. It's gotten to the point where 17 is almost the same as, like, Nork. Well, it's almost the same as 223.
Well, here's the reason I haven't gone to 17 is because I do have a 223, and my 223 does everything a 17 will. And more, and for about the same price. Yes, 17 is still a little bit cheaper, but I can reload my own ammo and get it exactly the way I want it, and I've got quite a bit more weight behind that projectile as well. So I do like 17, and your email actually caused me to ponder, should I get a 17 HMR just to play with? And maybe once I get rid of the buck mark, maybe I will, just for fun, just to see, but I'm pretty sure I'll be sticking with the 22 for most of my shooting.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. It's one of the firearms that I absolutely regret selling. The things that I did out in Calgary with Jeff's 17, some of the things that I did here with my 17, they're fantastic, but they don't like the wind.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Continuing on, since I have to. Owen, get out of your corner and speak up more. Grow a pair or some hair on them. You've got some valuable input.
Oh, man. I don't know how to comment on that, so I'm going to not.
Yeah, I'm going to say nothing. No, you're close to him. You just best be quiet.
Trevor, and you're absolutely right about the Calgary Shooting Center, as there are too many communists everywhere. And if you're out here, you need to hit up their cinema range. Yes, I'm a Calgarian.
Well, then you need to get there and post a picture of yourself outside the store with a piece of bristle board that says, if you don't shop here, you're a communist, so you can win a free t-shirt.
Exactly. So my question is this. If a Canadian wanted to participate in an Appleseed shoot in the States, is the paperwork required to transport a long gun, non-SBR, to the States and back reasonably easy? Or is it easier to try and convince Sticks to head to a shoot in Montana or Idaho and loan me one of his? Since there is a rather concerted effort stateside to improve fundamental marksmanship skills via Appleseed, is there a similar effort here?
Can I jump in here, Owen?
For it.
So, what perhaps Chris is not aware of is that we have several Canadians going to Michigan to shoot an Appleseed in a couple of weeks from now. And no, it's not difficult. The paperwork is not complicated. You just fill out a NFA. Is it NFA?
No, it's a NIA.
No. But which branch of the government is it?
TF.
ATF. ATF 6 NIA form, which is the temporary alien firearms importation license, import permit or something like that. Yep. Really, really simple to fill out. So, yeah.
Now, having said that, the easiest thing is to borrow one when you get there. You know,
yeah, that's
going
right.
to be easier still, but it is not hard to get that paperwork. It's really easy.
I mean, I had one and brought in a pistol. I think, Matthew, you had one filled out for a while, didn't you?
No, I don't think I did. I was going to, but I didn't. I think it's the one you're thinking of.
Oh, and you did one.
Yep.
Okay. So, yeah, see, if Owen and I can do it, anybody can do it. Now, granted, he is smarter than I am, but we don't like to brag on the show, do we, Owen?
Great.
And as far as an Appleseed here, I heard some rumors. Some of them about
I was going to say they call it a maple seed, I think. I have never heard of that until recently, and I've never heard of one being put on anywhere near me, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. So, yeah, look it up and see if there's one close by. I'd love to go to an Appleseed, or a maple seed for that matter. I think there's so much to learn still, and I just love to go and just improve my shooting skills.
Yep. Okay, going on. To me, the only real base level training available to Canadians is the Black Badge. While valuable, the requirements and headaches of an RPAL do make the Black Badge an item which requires a fair amount of commitment and tolerance of the myriad of bureaucracies in this country. The dynamic series of courses typically have a pistol level 1 as a requirement. Of course, there are also the elite level marksmanship courses, Rob Furlong for an example. So unless I've missed something critical, there is a serious lack of basic fundamental marksmanship training available in Canada, outside of what I learned in Boy Scouts or what my father taught me. Any thoughts to this? Thanks again for taking the time to enrich the lives of Canadian gunnies.
I think there is a lack of training, but I think it's partially due to a lack of demand. Mm-hmm. That being said, every time we bring in an instructor, we fill the classes up within hours, literally, with people from as far away as Ontario. And so that speaks to a need for training. But there are trainers out there. You just need to look for them. You got Rod Giltaka doing training in BC. You've got Phase Line Green Tactical. Yep. Is that correct,
phase,
guys?
Phase Green Line.
Yep. Phase Green Line Tactical in Ontario doing training. You've got Dave Young doing CAPS. He's been training civilians to carry firearms for defensive reasons since the 90s. So there are other options out there than the Black Badge. I mean, the Black Badge, let's face it, it's a safety course that you can play a game.
Yep.
It's good. It teaches you practical shooting skills. We'd like to think they're practical because the game is supposed to be practical. But there are other more defensive-orientated courses in Canada. Check CGN.
But I'm not sure that's Canada. I'm not sure that's what he's looking for here when he, you know, because those, again, that's all centered around having an RPAL. I think he's looking for more fundamental marksmanship, you know, rifle. Traditional rifle.
Something like an Appleseed, yeah.
Yeah.
Then you're just going to have to find a club that puts on F-class and find a coach.
Yep.
You could do some biathlon. You could shoot silhouette. Yep. Get a silhouette coach. I mean, it's out there.
Having said that, and I'm learning this a lot now that I'm doing more rifle shooting with my 308, there is a lot of carryover. I mean, I would feel I really learned to shoot on a handgun. And now I'm, even though I had rifles before, I learned to shoot on a handgun, how to do it properly. And now I'm going, oh, I can carry over a lot of these techniques and, you know, basic fundamental marksmanship principles back to rifle.
I'm with you. On one of the first things I carried over was, oh, wow, I can actually improve my accuracy on my rifle if I put a hard focus on the front sight of my rifle like I do on my pistol.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I find the trigger control is huge. For me, that's the one, the big thing that I found carries over. Yeah.
Cool. So, Matthew, you got anything for this one?
No, I just want to add that I would really like to see a maple seed close by to New Brunswick. And if there is one and anybody knows that there is one, or even an apple seed in Maine, I would cross the border and go to an apple seed in Maine. I mean, Maine's the only real close state that I could get to, but I really want to go. I want to go do one of these because it sounds like a lot of fun.
You know, it's like everything I've ever been involved in, nobody was going to do it for me. So you got to start it yourself.
And Matthew, you are perfect for that.
Yeah. You should be the maple seed coordinator for Atlantic Canada. Go get trained and start putting on maple seeds.
Right. Well, we'll see how that goes.
It's the only answer.
I'm not going to say it's outside.
It's going to be in the upcoming events next week, Matthew, so you might as well get on it.
I'm not going to say it's outside the realm of possibilities, but I wouldn't hold anybody's breath.
I tell you what, though, we're not going to change the name of our show to Maple Seed Radio like that show down in the States that used to be called the Arm Squirrels Project. That's now called Appleseed Radio. Just kidding, Sticks. No, it's you know what? We're passionate about stuff, and then there's Sticks and Appleseed. That guy takes it to a whole new level.
God. And good on him, too, because that is
You're
such a good
right.
program.
It's the only way. You got it, because that passion will become contagious. He's seven. What's he call it? He's seven steps, people.
Right.
Yeah. So there's probably a 12-step joke in there for his co-host, I'm sure.
Probably. Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. Love you too, Toby. So listeners, if you would like to send an email and have it read on the show, you could do so by sending it to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Matthew.
Yes.
Owen, have either of you had a chance to check our iTunes feed?
No, I'm sorry. I'm not at home, and my other computer is the one that has iTunes on it, not this one. So I didn't check it for this week, but we will be checking it for next week. So if there's one there,
And we're not about to start calling Stacy like some other podcast do to have her check it for us.
No, we'll do it ourselves. We don't like to outsource. Yeah.
No, we actually know how to do it. So and knowing how to do it and doing it, though.
Two different things. I do want to, you know, just once again, thank everybody for leaving the reviews that you do. We love them. We love getting them on iTunes. I mean, we love getting email, but there's just something about getting it on iTunes. And I should mention that due to the, and it might be because of the feedback we've been getting recently, our show is back to the top of the list on the Canadian Outdoors podcast feed. We were number one last week. So it's nice to see us with the exposure on iTunes. And you know, feedback from listeners is great no matter where it comes from. But like I said, on iTunes, it's cool because that's like an international kind of, everybody can go on iTunes and see it. So it's kind of neat to get it on that venue.
Paul Carlson from Safety Solutions Academy, we had him on not long ago. He shamed all of the podcasters recently on his show. He was like, I'm not going to ask you to go on iTunes and leave me a 5-star review like all those other podcasts do, but I am going to ask you to go on there and leave me an honest-to-goodness review, something that I can learn from. Don't just stroke my ego and give me a 5-star review because I asked for it.
And that's not us, though, by the way. Don't tune in late and think that this is Trevor talking to you. We don't want that. No. We just want you to stroke our egos.
Yeah. Tell us what we want to hear. Yeah. He asked people to just go on there and tell me what you think I deserve, and then I'll learn from that.
If you guys want to give us critical reviews, we encourage that. Just send it to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Not iTunes.
No, you mean slamfireradio@gmail.ca.
There you go. Yeah, or complaints.
Trevor for a lot.
Yeah, complaints can be forwarded too.
Yeah. Owen's butt. And while you're there...
Alrighty, let's carry on.
Shoutouts. I've got a shout out to our friend RJ for scoring me a Mag 40 challenge coin. He sent me a picture of this thing. It's really cool. Mag 40 graduates, I guess. I'm not really sure how you get one, but he said, do you want me to get you a Mag 40 challenge coin? I'm like, yeah, of course I do. Thanks. So he sent me this picture of this really cool Mag 40 challenge coins.
That's
so
all you're getting, like, though, right? You're just getting the picture.
Yeah, he didn't score you one of those. He's, the picture is and sent you a picture.
And then he's going to charge you $40 for it or whatever it is. I sent you the picture. Where's my money?
I hate being double R smart. Thought I was getting a coin. So, yeah, so I'm looking forward to getting to that when RJ makes it out here. Is he doing both Tommy and – no, let me rephrase that. Will he be attending both the Tommy class and the Daniel Shaw class?
I think so. I think that's So that's cool.
He's a training-aholic. He told me that this next year was going to be all about training, and I heard there's another class he's going to be taking in the States. He's taking Mag 40 now. He's going back for something else. He's taking two with us.
That's awesome.
I'm jealous. I'd like to do that, but
sure. So would I.
Takes time and money.
Yep.
Well, that takes us to the end of another fun-filled, action-packed episode, kids.
I've got a shout-out. I didn't write it down. I'm sorry. I should have. I was just waiting for you to ask, but that's okay.
Well, it's not there, so I know. The visual prompt was, you know, what
it wasn't. That's my bad. But nonetheless, Stefan, it was nice seeing you again out at the range. A buddy of mine that I shoot with. He's been on my YouTube channel before, and I think I've shouted him out before on the show. He listens, so it was just nice to see you again. It had been a while since we had met up at the range, but he was here the other day and did some shooting together. He had an AR-400 steel gong that we set up at 100 yards and smacked around with his SKS for a while. So that was really fun. It was really neat.
The gong cost more than the rifle.
The gong did cost more than a rifle. It is true. But it was a lot of fun. So anyway, thanks for the 7.62 ammo and the fun on the gong. So hope to see you out at the range again soon, hopefully when it's warmer.
Awesome. Owen, do you have anything?
I don't have any shows. So.
All right. Figured I faux pawed on Matthew. I should try and redeem myself by asking.
Sorry, I will just write it down next time so I don't screw up the cadence of the show.
Hey, I don't know why we have shows. Right? I mean, we have them, but who uses them, really?
Really.
So, all right. Okay, kids, let's get out of here. Let's encourage our listeners to check us out on the Crusader Podcast Network at crusaderpodcast.com. Tons of great Canadian and American content there, and even an international show with a host from either side of the border. Join both of our National Firearms Associations, the NFA and the CSSA. Regardless, right, at the end of the day, we look past all the strife and whatnot, they still exist to serve us, and we should never lose sight of that. They're only there to get things for us. Let's focus on that, people. check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada. They've given us our own little forum over there where you can leave feedback on the show, which, you know, and sometimes it'll get read and sometimes it'll get replied to. That's the whole clarification of the, you know, legal mag, not legal importing it in a trunk of a car kind of thing. And if you feel inclined, go like us on Facebook. We're at 1,171 and counting. And, yeah, it helps get the show noticed. So until next week, everybody, I'm the Frelate.
I'm the Warning Shot.
See you next week, everybody.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
That was funny, Owen.
That was funny. And off the cuff, too, on the fly. That was good.
No, we're getting to the point where we can do that with each other, right?
Sort of.
Kind
of. Yeah. We're getting there.
Okay, so we got it right once. But
We got it. This time we got it. So we're going to roll with it. Yes, we're good at this.